Oh my God. Hello, everyone. Welcome to another episode of Cadaver Gals, the show where we talk about the many ways people have died throughout history to cope with our own mortality. It's true crime. It's history. It's gross. Woohoo. I'm Gabby, and we also have Taylor.
Hey.
And Nika.
Hi.
And on today's show, we're going to hear about the 26 martyrs of Japan, who were in fact 26 people in 1597. Who were martyred for the sake of Christianity. Taylor's going to tell us about that. And then we're going to hear about a more recent death, a murder involving a husband and a wife, a lamp and a garbage disposal, just to name a few things. Woohoo! What fun. And as always, we have some content warnings. Don't worry, this week we're not going to talk about anything involving horses, as we've gotten feedback from a few people saying how gross that episode was. So I'm so sorry for that.
Well, it was. But
I don't apologize. I think that was very informative.
I apologize. Nika doesn't. Gabby's somewhere in the middle.
I'm going to stand my ground.
It's like, I'm sorry. I'm not sorry. I wish I could be sorry, but I'm mostly sorry to Taylor about that episode. But today we do have some other content warnings. We're going to be talking about Christianity, crucifixion, and all the bullshit that goes along with that. Murder, 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 genital mutilation, other body mutilation, chopping up bodies, and just some rape.
Cannibalism.
Some cannibalism. So this fucking show, it's going to be a whirlwind of grossness. So strap in, secure your gag reflex, and let's have a terrible time together. This is Cadaver Gals.
Cadaver Gals!
We're actually, this is Curb Your Enthusiasm. Welcome to our show. Okay, we're back from our clown theme song. Nika, how did you describe it? It was like a clown being eaten by an alligator.
Yeah, I described it as it's like a retired alligator who used to work at a circus. He lives in a swamp now in Florida, and when people come to visit him, that's what's playing.
That's real specific.
Yeah, actually a guy in a shack made it. Not me. A guy who lives in a shack in
the
swamp.
Yes, we definitely have the budget to hire anyone other than us.
So we're going to start out with Taylor telling us about these martyrs in Japan, and it is a fun and flirty story from what I can surmise so far. So Taylor, take it away.
Yes. Okay. So as I like to do, we're going back to my favorite time where people were shipping around and trying to claim already claimed land as their own or force their beliefs on other people. It was a great time, you know?
I love doing that. That's funny.
Yeah. So this is exactly what these Portuguese travelers did. So basically, there were these three dudes, and they land on a small island in Japan. They were the first Europeans to visit Japan. And the locals called them the Southern Barbarians. However, their goal was to trade goods and introduce Christianity.
Yeah, they're some like sexy Jesuits. We love that.
Yeah, well, the trading was actually pretty successful. They brought textiles and silk, wool, cotton, you know, the usual European stuff, gunpowder, those sorts of things.
Did they bring disease?
I'm sure, but they brought they brought Christianity, which became a disease for Japan during
this time.
But
more importantly, they brought muskets. Everybody wanted a musket back then. You know, that was like the thing to have, the accessory of the moment.
Right.
A musket moment. Sorry.
It's a musket moment.
It's a musket moment.
That's our new hashtag.
Hashtag musket moments. And
is that a musket in your pocket or are you just happy to see me?
Okay.
Sorry.
Have we done
it's a musket.
Yes,
I've
done.
Never been
we're
happy
done.
Before.
Oh, okay. Sorry. We're done with the musket.
Okay.
All right. Well, y'all know how I love my imagery of, I like finding imagery and describing things that I see.
That's like such a weird specific interest. I love describing things I can see.
Well, for the listeners, I'm sure they're like, you do a terrible job, but, you know, it entertains me. But yeah, I figured this was just, you know, back in the day in the 1500s, this was the way to document things, you know. They were like, it was like a form of comedy for them because they were like, y'all aren't going to believe what these goobers are wearing. I'm going to draw it for you. You know, like, I mean, this like dates back to like the cave people. They're like, y'all need to see this. I'm going to draw it. Okay.
So you're saying these are Japanese artists who are making fun of the Portuguese people.
Correct.
The Southern Barbarians.
The Southern Barbarians.
the Portuguese goobers, as they were known.
Yes, yes.
Okay, great.
So I'm going to try and draw this picture for you. It looks like a, well, what I know to be a triptych, but a triptych only has three panels and this has six. So maybe a double triptych. Double trip.
I don't know what a triptych is.
So a six-paneled drawing is Taylor is describing.
You know, I took art history in college. Not to brag.
Oh, wow. She went to college.
I don't think I did very well in that class. But anyway, so it has this ship coming in, and there's all of these men on there, all in the boat, and they all have red top hats, which, so evidently, the Portuguese wore red top hats, and I think that's really cute. And they're...
I can't wait to post this on Instagram later. You need to send it to me.
Yes. So they're... Okay, so all these guys, they're wearing red top hats, and they had the imperial facial hair, which is like the handlebar mustache and like the beard line down their chin, you know? You get the idea.
Mm-hmm. Like the Portuguese imperial look?
That's what it said. That's what what it's called today is the imperial beard style, I think.
With their muskets in tow. Wow, they were fashionistas. Love that.
It's a musket moment.
But these guys who got there first were like, hey, we need to get our church set up and they share the word that God is like super cool and all that jazz, you know, and go ahead and start with that Catholic guilt. Like make everyone feel guilty and feel like they're terrible people. And Japan was like, all right, that's fine. You've got some cool stuff to trade, so we'll deal with your weirdo religion or whatever. So basically, that's how Christianity was born in Japan. They ended up getting a lot of followers, actually. But then they started to get a little pushy, and they were like, okay, you have to be Christian. And they were being rude about the existing religions, which were mainly Buddhism and Shinto. And they even started selling them as slaves overseas, which is like really obviously uncool and messed up. And Japan's like, okay, that's enough. Enough is enough. No more missionaries. We need to pump the brakes. So they're like, okay, whatever, but we're going to keep doing our thing.
I don't know why I gasped in surprise that some colonizers enslaved the local people. I don't know why, but I did gasp.
Because that was their MO.
Well, there is also, because the ruler at the time, his name was Toyotomi Hideyoshi. And so he was the leader at the time, and he really liked how Christianity at first was like a counterpart to Buddhism. Because there weren't even that many Buddhists at the time, but he liked having like these two things. There wasn't just one monopoly on this like bigger religion. But then there's this story where one day he was just drinking, and then he was like, he called his like commander of the army over, and his commander was actually Christian. He was like, hey, stop being Christian, renounce your religion right now. And then his commander was like, nah, bitch, I'm not going to. And then he exiled him, and then he got mad. I don't know, was this also just like a drunken rage where he was like, now fuck Christianity, I don't like it anymore, you know? So it could have just been like a drunken spur of the moment thing where he was like, maybe it was also because they were being pushy or whatever.
Yeah, because they were being pushy and like selling people as slaves, which is that's pretty I can't say frowned upon, but it was frowned upon.
They were frowning hard upon it. Yeah.
And we're mad about it, obviously. So finally, Japan's like, we got to do something. We're not joking. So in October of 1596, there was this Spanish ship that comes in, cruising in with the intent to convert everyone to Christianity.
Yeah, the San Felipe.
Yes.
And the Spanish apparently were even more assholes than the Portuguese because they were like they're like, this is how it's done. We're going to convert everybody. Mm-hmm. We're jerks. The Portuguese were like a little bit more like, let's try to like adapt to the society.
Well, because the Spanish Empire was much more powerful than the Portuguese. And I guess the Spanish just had like done it more.
Yeah, right. They were into it.
So the leader of Japan was like, okay, first, I'm going to take all the stuff off your boat because you got some cool stuff. So I'm going to take that. And then they were like, I'm going to make a lesson out of some people. And so what he did was he took 26 missionaries and they were taken on a 600-mile journey. And at the end of the journey, which was on February 5th of 1597, there was a hill that they had to climb just to get them all good and tired. And then at approximately 10 a.m., the missionaries are tied to crosses, stabbed with spears in their chests.
Oh, that's so rude.
So rude. there were two soldiers and they went one by one and they each like had a spear and were stabbing these missionaries in the chest. And a lot of these missionaries were like teenagers. I mean, at the time, you know, they were seen as, you know, how age is different then because, you know, people died early, younger. But yeah, so a lot of these missionaries were like 15 years old.
And they were lifted up on the cross and then speared?
Yes.
Or were they speared first and then lifted up on the cross?
Put them up on the cross and speared them. I also have great imagery for that one, too.
Y'all.
Love some spear pics.
So excited for the Insta feed spear pics.
Yes. Go to Cadaver Gals on Instagram and Twitter and check out some missionaries with spears on crosses.
Well, I also read something that was like, before they were put up on the crosses, which first of all, it's really not funny that they were crucified, but it was actually like crucifixion is something that the Christians taught to Japan. So it's like they were being killed by the thing that they brought with them.
Right.
And then also as they were like being marched and like paraded through the cities, at one point they cut all their ears off, apparently. Isn't that so rude? It's so rude.
So rude.
Cut off your ears, then crucify you.
Wait, so who invented crucifixion? Like what? Because if they brought it
the
from
Persians.
Japan. Really?
Yeah, the Persians invented it, and then the Romans really went for it, you know? And we'll talk about that a little bit more in the next section. But then the Christians, there were like some people who had done crucifixions in Japan, apparently, but that's not exactly known, but they're pretty sure that it was the Christians who brought crucifixion to Japan. How kind.
So there were some locals that heard of this disastrous event. They got past the guards and started tearing off their clothing and like soaking up the blood to keep as souvenirs. So for 40 days, these missionaries were tied up to their crosses. It was assumed Japan was just like, we'll just leave them there. It's like not worth getting them down, I guess. But they assumed that they would just decompose and be eaten by animals, but that was not the case. So they were chilling up there for about 40 days.
That's so weird that no animals went to go get the bodies. That's like very, very weird.
Maybe they didn't like the taste of Christians or of Jesuits or whatever we're calling them.
Right. So from here, Japan was like, all right, see what we did? No more Christianity. We're done. Banned. So obviously there are still people that believe so hard. They were then forced to go underground and hide, go into hiding, or they were imprisoned or murdered.
Mm.
So then after that, it wasn't until 1862 that those missionaries were canonized and became saints. And there is now a feast day on February 6th in their honor.
What are we brunching on February 6th?
I was going to say, it's coming up. We should feast in their honor.
I mean, yeah. I'll actually be home in Atlanta, so we absolutely should.
We can do some like really disrespectful fusion of like Portuguese-Japanese fusion food. You know, figure out a new concept for the current hipsters of our generation to open a new restaurant.
So anyway, that is the story of the 26 missionaries who were stabbed and hung up on a cross and crucified.
Well, thank you, Taylor.
You're welcome.
Sounds like a terrible way to die. And on the next part of Cadaver Gals after this break, you will learn how it's very terrible to die of crucifixion. So we'll be right back. Okay, so we're back, Cadaver Gals. And so we just heard about the 26 martyrs of Japan. And I thought it would be super fun to just go through what happens when you get crucified, just in case it happens to you.
Can I do want to start with one thing on this. Since there were 26 of them, and they believed in heaven and hell, at least they were all with their buddies, and they were covered afterlife-wise, you know?
Yeah, go to hell with your buddies, or go to heaven with your buddies, you know? What is heaven without buddies?
Exactly.
That's like one of the
Not
first sentences in the Bible. I don't want to like have to meet new people in heaven, you know, that would suck. But I'm going to have to knowing my friends. Anyway.
Oh, no.
Okay.
To be fair, I think we're all going to the same place.
Aw.
The three of us.
We'll let you know what it is, cadaver fans. Okay. This is now a religion podcast. It's fine. Anyway, so let's talk a little bit about crucifixion. As I was saying earlier, the Persians came up with it in like 300, 400 BC, sometime thereabout. But then the Romans were like, hell yeah, this sucks. We want to do it the most. So the Romans were the ones who really went for it.
So the Persians were just like, I have an idea.
I mean, sometimes you have two sticks and then you want to like nail somebody to it. It just makes sense. Logic right there.
All right.
But I didn't interview any of the Persians for this. I didn't prep work with them. So I'm not exactly sure how they came up with the idea, but I'm pretty sure they had like a team building exercise where like, we're coming up with new punishments. Someone tossed around some ideas and then they came
like,
up with
added it. A new Slack channel and the channel was like torture ideas.
Yeah. Yeah, they're just like really bad ways to die. Let's do some, let's get a think tank on it, you know? But yeah, crucifixion was like one of the worst ways you could die in the Roman Empire, and they're all very creative as well. So, you know, that really says something about crucifixion. And the cool thing about crucifixion is that it is a slow death. It's very painful, and you can do it in public, and it's extremely humiliating. And it warns other people, don't be a dumbo and don't like do things against the Roman Empire, or this is what could happen to you. So, you know, really covering a lot of bases there. And they even made crucifixion part of the gladiator sport. So there's evidence by like 100 AD that while you'd have like the gladiators going at each other in the circus, they would also be doing some crucifixions on the side. So you can imagine like at a football game, like the cheerleader section or like the dancers who come out, like that's what the crucifixions were. Just like another little side piece of events going on. So woohoo! What fun.
Right. That sounds fun.
Yeah. Let's all go down to the stadium and see some crucifixions. And yeah, they usually, you know, the crucifixions were performed either on the roads nearby to cities or like right by the gates of cities just so that people could really see them so that they could be super public.
That happened in Game of Thrones, remember?
Yeah, also in Outlander. They had like the British Empire doing crucifixions, you know, that documentary Outlander and that other documentary Game of Thrones.
Right.
There, I did see this like headline of a story where this politician in protest, not sure what he was in protest for, he tried to crucify himself, but he stopped because it really hurt.
Yeah, no kidding. What? So what happens to your body?
So let's go through the process of like how the Romans did the crucifixion. And so a crucifixion, not just the one. We're talking about you,
there's
Jesus.
A lot.
Okay. There was a lot of them. They did thousands and thousands of crucifixions. And so first what they do, they would get this thing called the flagrum. The flagrum was made of leather strips that were fastened to a handle and had pieces of broken glass, bones, and lead weights on them.
Nope.
And they would basically flog the person.
Don't like that.
Yeah, and the point of this was it was designed to rip through flesh and muscle and pull it from the bone, and then that would usually make them almost go into shock, very painful. That was the first thing that would happen. And then there's obviously the imagery of, like, Christ carrying the cross up to the hill or whatever. But usually what would happen is then the person would just carry one part of the cross, like just the cross beam, basically. And so they would be paraded through the streets, humiliated. They would also be naked. All of their clothes would be taken away from them. And so then they would get to the crucifixion site. Often, because the Romans did this so much, there were already a lot of beams that were installed. So you would just be carrying your own crossbeam. They would have a beam already ready for you. There's been like a few pieces of evidence that have been found, because there's not really like, especially from, you know, Jesus's time. So like 1 AD, 100 AD, there's not as much like surviving evidence exactly of how crucifixions happen. But what they do think is they would either tie or nail your hands or your arms really to the crossbeam. But they were saying it probably wasn't through the hands. It was actually probably through the wrist, which mm-hmm. hits this nerve that basically it paralyzes your hands, but then the rest of your arms are in incredible amounts of pain. There was also in 1968, there was this box of bones that was found in Jerusalem that were the bones of a crucified man. And they found that instead of, like, you know, usually there's a depiction of, like, both of your feet being nailed to the cross through one nail. Actually, what they did was they would put the feet on either side of the beam. And so it's kind of like you're more straddling. And then they would nail each ankle in individually. And they would also have kind of like a wooden washer that they would also hit through so that it would be harder to rip your body off of the cross if anyone tried to save you or something like that.
For some reason, being like on either side, like straddling that just seems harder, or it seems worse. I mean,
well, it's worse, and also like it's humiliating because they're naked already. So it's just like very exposed and horrifying.
Yeah. And there's some accounts or quotes of people saying that sometimes people's genitals would also be nailed to the beam. Love that. And then also sometimes they would break your legs so that you couldn't put any weight in your legs or support yourself with your legs. And then usually you would die faster if that was a case. There was also like a variety of, so usually, you know, we have the cross shape for the crucifixion, but usually, I mean, there's the cross shape. There's evidence that it was more in an X shape.
Mm-hmm. Yep. I've seen that.
Yeah, that's in Game of Thrones, I think, too.
Yep.
And then there was also the quickest way you would die on a crucifix is if you were just put on a single beam where your hands were above your head and you're nailed in that way. Because basically what happens, the main theory of what they think happens when you're crucified is that you suffocate because you're going to try to like support yourself with your legs, but if your legs are broken or whatever, not going to do that for a very long time, and then it goes to your hands or it goes up into your arms and you're supporting yourself with your arms. And one of the worst details that I found was that as you're up on the whatever you are crucified on, like your joints start slipping out of socket too, so your shoulders dislocate, then your elbows and your wrists, and then usually by the time you're dead, your arms are about 6 to 7 inches longer than they were previously. I'm so sorry.
This is horrible.
Yeah, and then all the support basically to support your body up goes to your chest. It gets like lifted upwards, the rib cage does. So then you're basically in this position of constant inhalation and you can't breathe. But then also you're dehydrated. You also have the terrible wounds in your back. So you have sepsis, probably infection. And also with the pressure on your chest and with the lack of airflow, you know, your heart can stop working. So it's kind of like heart breathing, infection, dehydration, this combination of factors, and you die on the cross. Anyway, that's what happens when you get crucified. Isn't it fun and flirty? We love it.
That was so uplifting.
I know.
Stop. Do we know what is like the most recent? Have there been any recent crucifixions, is I guess what I'm asking?
Yeah, there have been. And I mean, rarely, obviously, there's not any place that's like using them. But there is actually, because I was looking at crucifixion in Japan, and I believe there was actually someone who was crucified during, our war prisoners who were crucified during World War II.
Oh, so, my gosh.
There have been ones, and it's, it's a terrible, terrible way to die. Even if it's like, even if it's not nails through you and they're just using ropes, I mean, basically the same thing's going to happen. Yeah. It just will take longer to die.
Which is almost worse.
Yeah, and usually you die either anywhere from like hours to days later.
Oh, days. That's horrifying.
I can't. I don't want to imagine. It sounds awful.
I know. Well, Gabby painted a pretty nice picture.
Oh, yeah.
And by nice, I mean vivid. Vivid.
It was
picture.
Vivid as hell. And it seemed like a really bad way to die. And the Romans knew that. And that's why they loved it so much. Okay, now that we've learned everything we need to know about crucifixion, that and more, we're going to switch gears. Nika has a story for us about murder.
I do. I mean, technically, crucifixion is murder, but this is one of my favorite murder tales because it involves husband and wife dynamics. And I just always appreciate learning more about that.
We just love some drama.
We do love some drama. So I was reading about this woman.
Stop bragging about reading.
So I was reading.
Taylor took an art history course. You were reading. I got into archaeology. with crucifixion.
Gabby, that's true, actually. Gabby plays more instruments than, like, the both of us combined, so I don't want to hear it.
I'm very talented. You're right. Okay. Moving on.
Exactly. No negative self-talk here. So we only talk about murder. So this woman, she was this Egyptian woman called Omaima Nelson, and she grew up in Cairo, in the slums of Egypt, kind of like outskirts of Cairo in the 60s. And she eventually ended up killing her husband, obviously. And that's – I'm not spoiling anything because we've been knowing that. But the way that she did it slash where she comes from is kind of the most interesting part. So I kind of want to just take y'all through it if you're okay with that.
Yeah, ready for it.
Oh, good. I'd always love getting like positive reinforcement.
What if we were just like, no.
And thanks for listening to the show today. No. No more story.
So, okay. So she grew up in the slums in the 60s in Egypt, and her family was pretty poor. She was abused by her stepfather and by her uncles, and so she just, like, did not have a good time growing up. She went through this process called genital mutilation, which is an illegal procedure, but basically what it is, there's, like, four different types, and they all range from – this is going to – oh, this – it really hurts to, like, read this, but
– Growing from crucifixion to this, I'm sure people are loving this right now.
I'm horrified by this. I really couldn't stomach reading about genital mutilation more than, like, a couple of minutes at a time because it's just so horrifying. But it can be anywhere from, like, removal of the clitoris to incisions sealing the labia and other kind of damage to the woman's genitals, essentially. And it's I mean, yeah, it's a total human rights violation, and it's actually was made illegal in 2008
in Cairo or
in Egypt. But there was a survey in 2014 that showed that 92% of women in Egypt still like have gone through some form of it, which is just absolutely insane. That's obviously awful. It causes a lot of physical and mental trauma. It makes sex or even going to the bathroom or things like that extremely painful, and it's just like something that's, I'm sure, excruciating and really hard to live with and to live through. So she went through that, as many women back then in Egypt did. She grew up, she turned 18, and when she was 18, she met this guy who was like an oil businessman, and he was in Egypt for work, and they ended up getting married. He was an older man, but her mom kind of told her, listen, you need to get out of here. And so essentially, she married this older man, went back to live with him in 1986 in Texas, and then got divorced a couple of months later. So she was alone. She was in the U.S. She didn't know English. She had no prospects, essentially, and was just totally isolated from family or her ex-husband or anything. And she was there in Texas. So she started kind of taking odd jobs. She was really beautiful. And at this point, this is like the 80s. She was very model-esque and she was very quote-unquote exotic looking. And so she started doing like amateur modeling slash nannying slash cleaning houses, just odd jobs. But kind of the main thing that she did is that she would go from town to town, find rich men at like bars usually, date them and move in with them very quickly, and then many times rob them. It's essentially what she would do. Yeah.
It sounded so normal until that, you know, modeling, part-time nannying, even like targeting rich guys at a bar seems normal. And then robbing them. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. There was this one report from her exes that she tied him up and robbed him while threatening him with a shotgun. So she kind of like lived this really insane lifestyle for a while. And I mean, part of me is like, I get it, survival. So, like, people have to survive. And she had no prospects. Like, I understand. I'm not saying it's okay. I'm just like, that was her headspace. So a few years passed like this. And then in 1991, she met this guy called Bill Nelson. And he was this character. He was huge, like very tall, pretty big. He drove this red Corvette and he had cowboy boots and he had a lot of money.
Corvette. What's the dance? I don't know.
I feel like I know this man. Like I've seen this man. You know what I mean? Like,
oh no. No, yes, men are out there like that. They just love to flaunt their money.
He's in a Coen Brothers movie. I don't know.
He used to fly. He was like a pilot, and then he started using his pilot license to smuggle marijuana. So he got that revoked. I think he spent some time in jail, actually, and then got out and got this really lucrative job working at a mortgage insurance company. Yeah, at a mortgage company. Yeah,
that's the drug dealing pipeline. You start drug dealing, then
when
you
you're
get
white,
into
when you're
mortgage
white, yep.
insurance. You know, it just happens.
Absolutely,
yeah, the so, white drug dealer story.
Yes, the American dream, if you will. So they met in Orange County, California, in a bar. They immediately hit it off because she's this beautiful 23-year-old, you know, amateur model who, like, barely speaks English but clearly knows how to get what she wants out of men, essentially. And then he's this, you know, 56-year-old guy who just loves to flaunt money and women and just live large, okay? Just like he's living his life.
Sounds like a toxic relationship in the making with those two personalities.
Yeah, I know. Well, it gets worse. So they quote-unquote fall in love and then get married within a few weeks. So she's like, I have made it. She's like, this is my plan. I've gotten married. I'm happy about this.
So up until this point, she had only been dating these men. But this time she decided, let's figure out, let's move in, let's get married, let's
absolutely
do the whole
yeah
shebang.
Legally okay yeah and so yeah she met her husband's family. They did not really like her. They like went to his ranch in Texas. Like, this man was making good money. So after a month honeymooning in his ranch, they go back to Costa Mesa, California, and settle in their apartment, which also I find that funny. It's just like, bro, you have a ranch, but you have to be in an apartment. Then again, California is real expensive. I don't judge. So they settle in to his apartment. It is Thanksgiving week, and things get a little messy.
A little dicey, would you say?
Yes, dicey is the word. So it's Thanksgiving Day. Bill calls his daughter to invite her over for Thanksgiving dinner. Her name was Margaret. She's still alive today, and she was 15 at the time. She says no. She says it's very much like the fuck you, dad. Like, you know, she could be my sister kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
So she said no. That was the last time that she ever heard from her dad again. Now, according to the medical examiner, Bill died, obviously. So Bill's cause of death was actually multiple blunt force injuries to his skull. And it seems like Omaima beat him with a lamp and an iron. And he was also found with ligature marks consistent with being tied to bedposts. But what happened to his actual body and the way that she tried to dispose of it, y'all, literally Bill's body was found in pieces.
Ew,
oh,
no.
We love this detail. So before we get into exactly what happened, we're going to take another quick break. You know, take a breather. There's a lot of gross stuff happening, a lot of gross stuff that's coming up. So we'll be right back. Okay, we're back, cadaver gals. And Nika was just saying that Bill was literally found in pieces. So Nika, what actually seemed to happen? Like what, like how did he die? And then what happened afterwards?
Yeah. So I'm going to describe his body and how the body was found first. And then we can backtrack into what police think happened slash what Omaima said happened. Ultimately, we will never know. But here we go. He was dismembered. And according to the medical examiner, it was as if someone had done this before because it was cut with such precision. His hands were found inside of a deep fryer in with pieces of turkey.
A deep fryer. Oh. With the turkey.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Happy Thanksgiving.
Yeah. Gobble, gobble. Now his torso. His torso was skinned, and it was on a clothing hanger bleeding out in the bathroom.
Yeah.
Like a swimsuit. Like you're, ew.
Gabby. Yes. There were trash bags all around the apartment, and they were full of pieces of him. And his head, which looks like it might have been burned as well, so like put in the deep fryer as well, was in the freezer next to frozen vegetables, which I just, for me, the combination of dead body and food everywhere is just, that's kind of what's getting me right now.
Well, like cooking it with the food is what's killing me.
Exactly.
Also, they're saying this seemed like, because of the cuts, it seemed like she had previous experience with this, but it seems pretty disorganized.
Yeah, he's like, I don't know. This is like an amateur hour.
I mean, it's
best.
Like all over the place.
Well, but you anyway. Still have to be precise and to like cut those pieces off. What she did with them is very chaotic.
Yeah, I think she was just frantically trying to get rid of the body. And so, like, for example, there was a lot of human flesh and human parts in the garbage disposal. And it turns out that the neighbors had heard it running for 2 days. Bill was found 3 days after Thanksgiving Day.
Right, because he had an apartment. So exactly. They could hear.
Mm-hmm. And yeah, and the neighbors just heard it running and churning and churning churning.
Oh, no. Oh, no.
They didn't know what it was. I know.
Oh, no. And they found out that it was her chopping yes. up. And
Yep. Yep. He was also castrated, which I just find really intense. And the most horrifying, or one of the most horrifying details from this case, in my opinion, is that 100 pounds of his body still have not been found, like, to this day. Oh. Like, they weighed out all of the parts that they found in multiple places, and 100 pounds was still missing. That could have gone down in the garbage disposal. That could have, I don't know, maybe she threw some out of the toilet. Like, we do not know. But that's just insane to me. How do you lose 100 pounds of human flesh? I do not know. Oh, well, you could eat it, which is what people surmised. I'm going to go to how she was found, because there were also parts of him in that situation. She was driving her red Corvette to her ex's apartment.
Was it her Corvette or his?
It was his Corvette. So she drove her ex-husband's red Corvette with his remains and trash bags in the car to her ex-boyfriend's apartment. And she knocked on his door and she said, "I need your help. I have accidentally killed my husband. I will give you $75,000 and 2 motorcycles if you help me to dispose of the body."
2 motorcycles.
Yeah, exactly. And so he was like, okay, let me think about it, thought about it, said, okay, I'm going to go get a truck and I'll meet you in the parking lot and we'll figure this out together. She was like, oh, my hero. Turns out he called the cops while she was waiting, and the cops come up to the parking lot and obviously catch her red-handed, literally with the body part, trash bags, blood on her, like the whole shebang. She was arrested, and yeah, the guy never made his $75,000, but that's okay.
I don't think I want $75,000 if I have to do that personally.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, I would probably do it for a couple million.
Oh,
no, I'm just kidding. I would not, because then you'd have that on your conscience the whole time, like the rest of your life, and also someone's going to probably catch you. You know, we've all seen TV.
You wouldn't be able to join me and Nika in heaven, since that's where we're going.
Exactly. So that is how she was caught, and she just, like, lost it the moment she was arrested. She said that her husband was on a business trip, that the human organs were not his. And then eventually she was like, well, he raped me and he, like, kept me in a bed for days, and, like, everything was in self-defense. And her version of how everything played out is that basically he had tied her up to the bed and raped her. And then she finally got, like, a hand loose and grabbed the lamp and hit him with it. And then she said that she doesn't remember dismembering him or gutting his stomach or taking out his organs or stuffing them in freezer or frying his hands. Like, she doesn't remember any of that. She basically blacked out. Later, she was interviewed by this court-appointed psychologist, and she told the psychologist that she had cooked his ribs in barbecue sauce and that they were, this is a quote, so sweet. The psychologist diagnosed her as experiencing PTSD and psychosis, basically. She obviously later recanted this, and she says, again, she doesn't remember dismembering him, but then throughout, like, the process of finding her guilt, she said at times that Egyptian spirits told her to dismember him and were, like, controlling her, basically, because according to Egyptian mythology, if you dismember or, like, kind of spread parts of someone, they can't go into the afterlife, is kind of also something that she was saying. She basically tried to blame PTSD and abuse and self-defense, but it's really hard because a lot of her personal injuries were not being beaten injuries, and they were not injuries consistent with rape. They were injuries consistent of, like, someone trying to chop someone off and maybe accidentally, like, getting, like, cuts or bruises or whatever. But they just – and there was no evidence of sexual assault either on her body.
Well, also because, like, the psychiatrist had said that she said that she had put on – like an outfit too for all this, that she had put on red shoes, red hat, and red lipstick before she chopped up and cooked the body. So she like dressed up for the occasion, according to the psychiatrist.
Yeah.
She said that? She told the psychiatrist that? Or like, how long after did she go to her ex-husband to say, hey, can you help me?
Or her ex-boyfriend?
Or her ex-boyfriend, yeah.
Her ex-boyfriend, yeah. The third day of her husband being dead.
Like,
and that's when she was found.
That could have been my birthday. My birthday is around Thanksgiving.
That's all you're thinking of, Taylor? Oh my gosh. What?
Well, what it's on just earth? Like, no, it's just like to think about like, oh, I'm celebrating another year of life, but meanwhile there's this woman that is like hiding body parts. It's just like weird and disturbing.
Were you alive back then?
Yes.
Oh,
well, yes,
sorry.
This was like in 91, Nika.
Yeah, this was in 1991. Sorry.
Okay. Okay.
I'm just here to make everyone feel old.
A reminder, listener, Taylor is 500 years old.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So she basically tried to do like an insanity plea, but it didn't work. And she ended up being guilty. She's been up for parole a couple of times and she's still here. But has been denied parole each time, essentially. She'll be up for parole again in 2025, I think.
I don't love the idea of her coming back out into the world.
Yeah, while she was in jail, she started a relationship with this 70-year-old. And I think...
They got married.
Yeah, they got married through letters. And I think he was pretty well off. And he died. And I think she inherited a good amount of money.
Well, wow. Yeah, because it was like... Well, it's interesting because oftentimes during trials, like the defendants don't have to go up as witnesses, but she actually went up as a witness during her case. And when she was on the stand, she was like sobbing and she was talking about all these moments of abuse. And she was talking about how her husband like threw her kitten outside of the car while they were driving and all this like sexual assault and all of this. But then obviously... her testimony didn't help in her favor and she was sentenced to second-degree murder. She was also on trial for the thing that Nika had brought up about the boyfriend being tied up and held at gunpoint. She was also on trial for that at the same time and she was convicted guilty of that as well. And there was this really great quote from one of the police officers who was in the courtroom during her trial.
Can't wait to hear this.
Said, Omima Nelson is the most bizarre and sick individual I've had the occasion to meet. No one needs to look at the Dahmers of Milwaukee or the Hannibal Lecters of the screen. A new predator has emerged named Omima.
I mean...
That's so dramatic.
It's so dramatic.
But I mean, worthy of the drama, I would say.
I watched Silence of the Lambs last night, so this is just all very fitting.
Well, how is everyone doing after this episode? I think there's a lot of gruesome gore... shit that went on today.
Some shit
went
down.
I feel like I need to take a bath. Like, I just need to take a moment. I need to mist my face with rose water. I need to be okay again.
Do you need a kiss on the forehead?
I'm in fetal right now. I need a kiss on the forehead. Yes.
I would just like to express gratitude for living in a time where crucifixion, you know, isn't a... I mean, I don't want to live under a capital punishment system, but I'm happy crucifixion isn't one of the options.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it seemed like a bad way to go.
Yeah, I feel like this show really just helps us be grateful for living in this day and age, even though this day and age isn't exactly the peachiest. But I guess no day and age really is. You just gotta, life's what you make it. It's Hannah Montana.
Oh, okay.
It's Hannah Montana, actually.
I didn't know if this was, like, from your Passion City Church days or something. No. Like, we were doing some Christian. I would also, like, for the record, just for everyone, for all the jokes aside, I'm an atheist, okay? I'm just going to say it for the record. Well, an agnostic. You know, I'm just like, maybe there's something, you know, there's a little something happening
going
sometimes.
On.
There's a little something. We've all encountered a something.
I love that you're calling a higher deity what, like, I call some zest in a salad. That's a little something. Like, what?
Zest in a salad, the higher power. What is the difference, Nika? It's all something like, greater. You know, that's humanity, like,
there's
bro.
There's a kick to that. There's some something, something. Is that chickpeas? Spiced chickpeas? I don't know. Sorry, yeah. I just had a salad.
God is the zesty salad of life, you know?
Actually, you know, I do want to leave our listeners with a tip. I've been adding cranberries to my kale salads, and they're really, really yummy and good for you.
Nika,
and good at preventing UTIs.
That's not like a new thing. Sorry.
I'm so sorry. I forgot you're 500 years old.
Right.
Well, listeners, we are about to descend into a full-out brawl, so we're going to conclude this episode before you have to listen to that. Or if you do want to listen to that, tune in next week as we just brawl for an hour. All right, this has been Cadaver Gals. Thanks for listening.
Cadaver Gals!
Cadaver Gals is a production of School of Humans and iHeartRadio. It is hosted, produced, mixed, researched, chatted, blah, blah, blah by Gabby Watts, Nika Duarte, and Taylor Church. You can follow us on Instagram and Twitter at Cadaver Gals. And yes, to those people on Instagram, I know I have a monotone. I know. I'm going to work on it, but I'm not going to make any promises. Okay, goodbye.